And here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It is Thursday, June the 3rd, something like that, June the 3rd, 2010. As a reminder to all of you out there who are going to be in the Evansville, Indiana area this weekend, none other than Phil Turney, survivor of Israel's deliberate and premeditated attack upon his ship, USS Liberty, will be in Evansville speaking there and doing a book signing. Anybody who's interested in hearing this war hero speak about his experiences aboard the USS Liberty when Israel tried to murder him and the entire crew of almost 300 people, simply contact me at nomorewarsforisrael@gmail.com, or you can email Phil at tonktime, that's T-O-N-K-T-I-M-E, tonktime5@yahoo.com, and we will make sure to provide you with the information you need so that you can go and hear this incredible man speak. And I don't use that word incredible lightly. Having said that, Phil is here with us. I'm going to go ahead and bring him up. Phil Turney, come on board.
Okay, thanks very much, Mark. Remember the crew of the USS Liberty. And never forget those guys that were slaughtered that day by the monster of the Mediterranean. And that monster is Israel. And I also want to add that we have on two heavyweights today, I mean, patriots to the max.
Yep.
Two men that you better listen to. Because that when they talk, they'll rattle your teeth.
Absolutely.
And it is a special honor, as it was last week with you, Mark, to be on the show with Mark and Mantique. And I mean that sincerely from my heart, because without these guys, we're nothing at all. And we need all the support we can get. And I also want to mention a book called Guilt by Association, author Jeff Gates. This book will rattle your teeth. It will shake your teeth, folks. This is a must read. You've got to get this book, Guilt by Association, mm-hmm. author Jeff Gates, and also my book, and Mark Glenn collaborated on this book, What I Saw That Day. Just go to Amazon.com, put in What I Saw That Day, and order that book, and believe me, it will tell you things that you never believed were true, but they are true. And we need to save this country. It's going to take patriots like we got on the air now. God bless them. Thank you for being on the show with us. And, Mark, I would hope that that Gordon and Jeff give out their email addresses and whatever they need so the folks can join in on their websites or blogs or whatever. So let's go ahead and get on with this wonderful show. And thank you, gentlemen, for being on. It is my honor.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. As Phil indicated, ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by none other than Jeff Gates, the author of Guilt by Association and the owner of the website criminalstate.com, and his trusty sidekick, Gordon Duff, of veteranstoday.com. Both of these websites, ladies and gentlemen, are as necessary to your understanding of what the hell is going on in our world today as spark plugs are to a gasoline engine, okay? Both of these websites really are, for all intents and purposes, upstarts. I've only been reading Veterans Today for a good, I don't know, 3 months, something like that, but this thing has literally taken off like a rocket. And you're not going to find, with very few exceptions, are you going to find the kind of analysis that you will on this website. So you need to go there, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to believe the lies, then go ahead and stick with your mainstream media. But if you want to know the truth about your investment, and what I'm talking about with regard to your investment, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about your place as a citizen of the United States of America. That's your investment. And the return that you're getting on that investment is nothing but fool's gold. It's worth nothing. And,
hey, Mark?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mark, let me put in a plug here on Veterans Today and some of why I think people should be reading us. We started as a veterans advocacy. Boy, I can't even talk. It could be me having a brain freeze. Advocacy group years ago, and in the past few years, we've had a lot of people join us because of not necessarily politics, but because out of patriotism, mm-hmm. and not just American patriotism, but patriotism for every country that cares about democracy, cares about its own people.
Mm-hmm.
What we've added to our publication, which is veteranstoday.com, the editors there, among the group of editors, which include medical and veterans people, but there's me, Gordon Duff, Jeff Gates, along with us, Colonel James Hankey, former defense attaché to Israel, Colonel Eugene Khrushchev, former first secretary, Soviet embassy in Kabul. We've got in our group out of Pakistan, our contributors include Admiral Surley, chairman of their Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Begg, former head of their army, Brigadier Asif Harun Raja, chief military strategist for Pakistan, Dr. Rahman, PSYOP specialist for the government of Pakistan. We have a strong crew, and the crew is built not to propagandize, not to make money, but essentially to access the world's intelligence community at the highest level.
Exactly.
We have Cal Nouri from Afghanistan, who represents the royal families and tribal chiefs of that country, is an editor at Veterans Today. We have affiliations with a number of the world's major intelligence organizations, strong relationships with the command structure of the U.S. Army. We added Dr. Alan Sobrowski, former head of studies at the U.S. War College, is an editor of Veterans Today. What you have available is quality intelligence.
Yes.
It'll be tough. You'll hear the truth. You'll see what you don't see elsewhere, but you'll be accessing intelligence that you can't buy from the commercial sites that you can sign up for to get whatever people are selling at the time.
Yep.
Jeff, why don't you take this for a bit?
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm delighted to publish there, as are others. And the notion is, how do you make transparent, and particularly in the case of this show, Mark and Glenn, and good, Mark and Phil, good to be back with you, how people wage war by way of deception is one part of this.
Yep.
And that particular country you named in your prologue. Veterans Today certainly did not start out there, but the more that intelligence people have looked around, I think the more people are coming to the conclusion that all these many nations that Gordon mentioned share a common problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all trying in good faith to defend the country and the values we stand for by sorting this out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the mission of Veterans Today and also criminalstate.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you pierce through the fictions and get to the facts?
Absolutely. And listen, the facts right now are what we need. I mean, they are like an antidote to this disease that's going to kill us. If we don't get the truth, we are finished as a nation. You know, fellas, when I originally planned to have you on, we were going to talk about the flotilla, which we can certainly talk about. But then Gordon, in a phone call conversation I was having with him, suggested that I look at his most recent piece on Veterans Today, and that we might want to use this as the backdrop for today's discussion. And as usual, Gordon's wisdom has won out. This article that he has just written, entitled "False Flag Coming, Usual Suspect, Muslim Terrorists Being Thawed Out," it is a must-read, and I'll tell you, you know, there isn't too much that scares the bejesus out of me these days, but I'll tell you what this article did, and I'll tell you why, because I can't find anything, even with my limited sphere of influence and background in intelligence work and whatnot, I can't find anything in this that is flawed. And obviously, we've got a real problem here, because as we just witnessed this past week, in a very small, and I would say almost circumstantial way, we are dealing with a nation here, as you have said in your many articles and on your website, Jeff. It is a criminal state. I mean, it is murder incorporated, okay? For those of you out there who do not understand the term murder incorporated, that was the name of the outfit given to these gangsters back at the turn of the century who ran organized crime. That is what Israel has become, and it seems as if Israel is intent upon maintaining this position and spreading it like a disease around the entire world. Gordon Duff, your article deals with not just the possibility, but the very likelihood, the very good likelihood, that what is going to propel America into this next phase of the war the Judaic, what did you refer to Israel in the last article about the flotilla? The Judaic Republic of Israel?
Yes.
Yes, that the next...
It's clearly a theocratic state and a thinly veiled military dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
Israel has nothing to do with Jews. When Jeff says criminal state, it's a state that exploits the Jews of the world
mm-hmm.
as much victims as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we have to do if we're going to be real patriotic Americans
mm-hmm.
is that we have to stick with American values.
Sure.
Whether you're black, white, Jew, Christian, or Catholic,
mm-hmm.
you can be an American. If an American chooses to be a dual citizen because of their Jewish faith, it's for us to keep them informed so that they know where their allegiance should lie
mm-hmm.
and that they're being played. Let me jump onto something here. Jeff, I don't excuse you. Would you a little excuse from you? But I want to build here. I'll try to do it in 5 minutes. But a little historical theory here on where the criminal state comes from. We don't remember our history very well. W, our former president, loved throwing the terms axis of evil and evildoer around, as did President Reagan. What we've forgotten, of course, we go back to 1967, and the USS Liberty, a ship that was brutally attacked for hours, machine-gunning people in life rafts, firebombing thousands of cannon shells, torpedo boats, the entire Israeli military tried unsuccessfully to sink an American ship. Why? Because they wanted to cover over that the 1967 war was a sneak attack, a Pearl Harbor attack, on Egypt and Syria. Not the first time they tried to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to seize land,
mm-hmm.
Lebensraum,
mm-hmm.
same as we saw from that mustache commando in Germany several decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
The same theories, the same things acting out again. The stories we got, I remember 1967, and I was told that the Egyptian army had gotten up and was advancing on Tel Aviv. Well, I'm sorry. Truth is that Egypt and Syria never were able to mobilize their forces. Their air forces were destroyed on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Their territory was seized, and they made up for it with some unpleasantness in 1973, which the entire military force of the United States applied as quickly as we could. Saved Israel from a disaster of their own making. But what is this really about? What's Israel about? Now, we know that Israel has spied against the United States continually since its inception. Before there was an Israel, we had Klaus Fuchs, we had the Rosenbergs,
mm-hmm.
all of the nuclear spies,
mm-hmm.
those that sold U.S. nuclear secrets to arm Joseph Stalin,
yep.
were Zionists.
Absolutely.
Entirely. But let's run forward here through the Suez Crisis of 1956, when the Israelis got together with the French and British and decided to seize the Sinai. President Eisenhower decided that they were going to be thrown out, that Israel wasn't going to be allowed to get away with what they thought they could.
Mm-hmm.
But in a broader sense here, who was the real axis of evil? Was there such a thing as world terrorism? And it's my theory, basically, no. The real evildoers, if we were to take the clock back to 1969, Gaddafi had just taken over in a military coup in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
Gaddafi hated Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Gaddafi immediately threw in his lot with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He made lots of anti-Israeli noises, but he started a germ warfare program, he started a poison gas program, and he started it with Israeli help. Now, this last 2 weeks, the Guardian in the UK, one of their major newspapers, exposed the relationship between South Africa
mm-hmm.
and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
They printed documents showing that Israel had agreed, despite all sanctions against apartheid South Africa,
right.
to help South Africa develop weapons.
Mm-hmm.
What this led to were two things. One was a germ warfare, biowarfare, chemical warfare program organized between Israel and South Africa, a massive program aided by Iran under the Shah, General Gaddafi, Soviet Russia, East Germany, North Korea, and Libya.
Mm-hmm.
That was the axis of evil. Who Israel's real partners were, and the remaining countries still are, the partners of Israel. Israel was never a friend of the U.S. It was always joined at the hip with Gaddafi, North Korea, the apartheid gang were gone.
Mm-hmm.
Soviet Russia is gone. East Germany is gone. Oh, Czechoslovakia, a major manufacturer of weapons of mass destruction. They were a partner of Israel
mm-hmm.
when they were a communist country. And the Shah, of course, is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But Israel was part of an axis of countries that flooded the world with assassination weapons, mm-hmm. poisons, agricultural diseases, all made and sold for profit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other part of this program, in 1975, Israel entered a program with South Africa to manufacture nuclear weapons. Now, we are holding documents on this program where 10 uranium-235 bombs mm-hmm. were built in South Africa by Israel. We know the company, Arms Corps, that is responsible for it. We know the individuals involved. We know that the first nuclear weapon was exploded in the Indian Ocean September 22, 1979. It was found by a U.S. Vela satellite. It was identified as a uranium nuke because of its dual flash at 80 milliseconds apart.
Mm-hmm.
It was detected by our acoustic sensors. But because of Israel's power in the U.S., this whole idea was suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was never allowed out. UN inspectors under Hans Blix went into South Africa in 1990 because the apartheid government, rather than turn these nukes over to Nelson Mandela, decided to give their 9 remaining nukes to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the U.S. got 6 of them. We know the company that packaged and shipped them. I know the person who designed the handling equipment and cradles for the nuclear weapons. I've spoken to him.
Mm-hmm.
But 6 went to the U.S., and 3 were shipped to Oman. This was the same time period that Saddam Hussein had invaded Kuwait, and there was a fear that he would use weapons of mass destruction, gas, nerve gas, whatever, on the U.S. and Britain. So Britain, 4 minutes, is a kind of a convoluted political situation, decided to buy 3 of these tiny nukes and have them shipped to Oman. And there is a massive amount of documentation about how this was done, how the orders for this were signed by Margaret Thatcher. We know the people that transported them. We know the company that bought them in the UK,
mm-hmm.
and we know that they fell into the hands of 2 Israeli arms merchants
mm-hmm.
before they arrived, and they disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, in 1991, those 3 missing nuclear weapons, and this has been the undercurrent for so much of what is going on in the world today, those 3 18.2 kiloton uranium bombs, Israel has been coming to the United States and telling us Saddam has them.
Mm-hmm.
They were the reason we went into Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And when we couldn't find them in Iraq, Israel called up the White House and said, no, they were loaded on 3 ambulances and driven into Syria.
Yeah, I remember that.
And Israel demanded that we attack Syria.
Mm-hmm.
However, our detection equipment would have found them on ambulances, and we refused to do this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then we were told they were in, that Hezbollah had them in Lebanon, and Hezbollah was going to transfer these to Haifa and have them exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is since 2003. Now, if you're ever wondering why the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is building a wall around Gaza and that we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars of American money for a nuclear shield for Israel, it's because of these three tiny nukes. But, whoops, there aren't three anymore because U.S. detectors found that one of these nukes had been exploded. There are only two left. Where did it explode? In North Korea. Mm-hmm. How did it get to North Korea from Israel? You guess. But for 18 years, these nuclear weapons have been in Israel. Three of them. Now only two. One of them must have accidentally just slid over to North Korea somehow. Mm-hmm. Part of that axis of evil relationship. Mm-hmm. But the U.S. is being continually told, President Obama is being told, that they're out there. That's our great secret.
Mm-hmm.
A great secret that's been leaked to us over and over again by intelligence officers of one country after another. So we're building a massive wall around Gaza and supporting this insane, brutal blockade there because we're protecting Israel from these imaginary nuclear weapons it's had for 18 years. Mm-hmm. Israel saying that, well, when they get into Gaza, those weapons are going to be smuggled by tunnel into Israel and kill millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. and Britain were both informed by the government of Israel that they believed these nuclear weapons were on the Turkish ship that Israel seized.
Mm-hmm.
Their rationale of clear and present danger, and none of this is public, not until now,
mm-hmm.
that the Turkish ship they seized had three, that we know to be two, nuclear weapons that have been in Israel for years.
Mm-hmm.
That same, I call it the whack-a-mole game.
Mm-hmm.
They show up here, they show up there. Whenever Israel wants to do something wrong, they use nuclear blackmail against the U.S. and Western Europe,
mm-hmm.
saying these mysterious stolen nukes that Israel's had for nearly two decades are the rationale. So the U.S. government isn't going to do anything about the piracy in the Mediterranean,
mm-hmm.
because we're too busy protecting Israel from these imaginary nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
My concern, of course, since Israel is trying to hang these weapons onto Syria
mm-hmm.
and tries to hang them onto Iran, and these weapons disappeared in 20-foot shipping containers
mm-hmm.
in 1991, that, well, we hear these continual threats that our ports are vulnerable
mm-hmm.
to nuclear attack by a weapon in a 20-foot shipping container, heaven
mm-hmm,
forbid,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
one like Israel's had several of for years, that they got weapons that Israel built themselves in South Africa. Well, Israel is now on the ropes. The world is descending on them for the mm-hmm. brutal and illegal acts that they've done, which they're not going to be able to talk their way out of.
Mm-hmm.
And why are we saying this? Why are we leaking these things? Because unless we save them,
mm-hmm.
we're going to lose Baltimore, we're going to lose Houston,
mm-hmm.
we're going to lose Rotterdam, we're going to lose Hamburg. Unless we hang this on Israel, they're going to drop one of these nukes
sure.
port and explode it. They're not going to do it if we get the word out there.
Absolutely.
We've stopped them before, we're going to stop them again. Every time they try something, someone's going to let us know, and we're going to get the word out.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, I am completely convinced of the fact that were it not for men such as you and Jeff Gates and others who have been studying this chess game and who have been predicting accurately the next move that one side is going to play, that were it not for the fact we've been able to advertise this to everybody, that we would already be in Iran, we would already be in Syria. But because of the fact that we have been predicting that certain things are going to happen, and then, of course, these were the things that they were planning, it has forced them to say, okay, forget it. We have to figure out a plan B now because plan A has already been made public. So, you know, and I've been saying for some years that with all of the rhetoric coming out of Israel's war machine, that that an American city was going to go up in a nuclear weapon, plus the very highly publicized statements by some very important people in Israel, such as Martin Van Creveld, that that Israel had targeted European cities with nuclear weapons. This is the way gangsters talk. You see, they talk in very coded terms. You know, they talk about cities going up in mushroom clouds. What they're actually doing is threatening Europe and the United States, saying if you don't play ball with us, this is what's going to happen to you. And we'll just simply blame it on an Islamic terrorist group, and everybody will buy it hook, line, and sinker. Jeff Gates, you've been sitting over there getting ready to erupt like a volcano. You work very closely with Gordon Duff. I know that you two recently just went to Pakistan and met with some what I would consider to be very important people. What do you think about Gordon's assertion here?
I think he's on point. I mean, this is your by association opens with page one, chapter one, saying this is game theory. You know, if you look back at the potential of what this latest act in the Mediterranean has done, rest assured it's set off when the Israelis do something. You need to not just look at the action, but with the reaction to that action, and then the reaction to that, and sort of a cascading effect.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the first thing you got was an enormous amount of demonstrations worldwide. Within 24 hours, you had a couple of rockets with people trying to, you know, shoot these sort of oversized bottle rockets into Israel. And Israelis came in and killed, three militants. And so this is how it works. You set off a situation like this, and suddenly looks like you're under attack. You're once again the victim. But everywhere you turn, it's an agent provocateur model that operates by deception. You never know what it is they have in mind. Because this is game theory. This is what's called non-cooperative game theory. You never know the goals of someone that we've actually treated as an ally now for 62 years, whose values are extraordinarily different from ours, and who we were warned by the Joint Chiefs in 1948. They said, do not do this. Do not recognize this so-called state, this enclave of extremists. They said, they are fanatics. That's the Joint Chiefs' term. It's not mine. And they seek hegemony. They seek domination in the Middle East. It's clear they seek hegemony beyond the Middle East, but certainly there. So we're in dangerous times, and what we're attempting to do, both on criminal stuff, the side of today, is get right in real time, get in step with these operations as they go forward, and give them some transparency so it makes it more difficult for them to proceed.
I'm going to bring Phil up here in just a second, but before I do, I want you two gentlemen to chew on this idea here for a moment. I want to just throw this out there for people to consider whether it could possibly be right or wrong. One of the things that has hit me with regards to this latest attack on the flotilla is the issue of Turkey. Now, Turkey in the last 6 months or more has really played a very, what I consider to be, very extraordinary role in all of this. You have Erdogan, who's coming out, and he's using language that we have not seen and would not expect to see from a secular state such as Turkey that's a member of NATO. But the fact that it was a Turkish ship that was attacked, the fact that these were Turkish citizens that were killed, and now you have Erdogan coming out in this fashion, what I smell here is that the planners in places such as AIPAC and Jinsa, and of course their counterparts in Tel Aviv, they do not want to see the Middle East world rally around somebody like Ahmadinejad. Even though Iran is a Shia country and most of the Arab world is Sunni, they don't want to see them rallying around Iran, particularly with the comfortable relations that Iran entertains with countries such as Russia and China. Yeah.
Mark, let me cut you off here. There is no better friend that Israel has than Ahmadinejad. There's no one that serves him any better. If it weren't for the rhetoric from Israel and the United States, the people of Iran would have gotten rid of him long ago.
Mm-hmm.
He's only in there now, as Karzai is in Afghanistan, with a stolen election. He's an unpopular leader with a people that are very advanced, that have a love of democracy, and that are absolutely sick of being run by this moron and a pack of mullahs. And this guy is a total moron, or is he a moron, Jeff? What do you think?
Well, I think it's interesting to watch because whenever, we call this an asset in the trade, you know, someone who can be relied on to perform consistent with their personality profile in the right time, place, and circumstance. And whenever you need someone to make it clear that Israel is under threat, who comes to the microphone but Ahmadinejad? If you look into the background of the others around him, and go back into the Iranian, you know, turnover in 79, you dig back into that and you realize this is not unlike, you know, producing a movie. You know, it's like you do a long-term casting call. You bring these characters onto the stage. And I think Ahmadinejad is absolutely played a marvelous role, for Israel. He credibly, quote, credibly makes them look like they're under a threat any given time. But Gordon, you might, let me come back to you. What sort of a credible threat does Iran really propose?
Well, there are few countries on this earth with less military capability than Iran. Iran is using an air force 2+ generations behind that of Israel. Without flying over the massive American air forces in Kuwait, the Gulf region, and Iraq, to fly from Iran one way to Israel is 4,500 miles, 9,000 miles round trip.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, neither Israel nor Iran have the ability to attack one another at all. Iran, again, we had a new UN report accusing them of being 2 steps away from having nuclear weapons. The same report we've seen over and over again, that they had 4% enriched uranium, now they have 20%. Well, that still puts you years and years away from having nuclear weapons, which, of course, Israel's had since 1962 and blackmailed the world with. Iran has no ability to project power. They have a weak navy, small patrol boats. What are they going to do? Load up transport aircraft? Maybe they could get Israel to make false passports for their entire military, and they could fly to Tel Aviv on vacation, come out with spears and box cutters, and run rampant through the shopping malls of Tel Aviv. But there is no other way that Iran can operate across its own border.
Marco, these are basically, you know, master mythmakers and very sophisticated storytellers. You create a storyline like the Clash of Civilizations, and you have to maintain that, the plausibility of that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what Gordon and I were doing in Pakistan, we're there at the invitation sponsorship of the military, was to explain how Pakistan was being pre-staged, this was mid-February, as the next plausible evildoer. Now, since that time, of course, we've been, if you look on the Veterans Day website, you'll find lots of commentary on the, you know, assorted attempts to maintain that storyline. And what we're doing is taking these operations, like the so-called Christmas Day bomber, is now the crotch bomb sizzler. Remember this Nigerian who came through the airport at Schiphol,
mm-hmm,
in Amsterdam with the help of an Israeli-owned security company. Likewise, the Times Square bomber is now the Times Square fizzler, again, a sort of a remarkably inept operation by a guy who somehow went back and forth to Pakistan 16 times,
mm-hmm,
shows up with some alarm clocks, some Walmart propane tanks, some fertilizer that won't explode, and about 80 M-80s in the back of his car,
mm-hmm,
and suddenly we're citing those two incidents as precedents for what a threat Iran proposes, and now who? Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about creating a storyline, maintaining a narrative. That's why this crowd had to have such dominance in mainstream media, because when you have a system of governance dependent on facts, how do you get your facts?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to media, you go to pop culture, you go to places to get facts. And at this point, you know, our values are very much in danger. We will look back on this age as a dark age, because,
mm-hmm,
we don't have the facts with which to operate. We've been induced by false beliefs, as in the false intelligence in which we believe to go into Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to war. We went to war based on beliefs. Mm-hmm. If that's not a crusade, I don't know what is. Mm-hmm. But we will look back on this time as a dark age, and what we're trying to do on these websites is make it transparent so people can recover their own their system of governance.
Well, one of the things that Jeff and I verified when we were in Pakistan at a briefing with the highest levels of the security services, in a private conversation with people that we can't quote, mm-hmm. is that Osama bin Laden died December 15th, mm-hmm. 2001,
mm-hmm.
and that, well, you know, if there was ever a smoking gun about what Israel has been involved in, and I won't say it's the fact that there was a Mossad film crew sitting in the street in Manhattan filming when the planes hit the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I call that the coincidence of all time.
Yeah.
Or as the representatives of the EU, including Hans Kochler, had pointed out a couple of weeks ago, that no matter what anyone says about 9/11, nobody can explain someone, Larry Silverstein, coming on TV and saying that he pulled Building 7
mm-hmm.
in 20 minutes, an effort that everyone knows would take hundreds of man hours just to engineer.
Sure.
Now, not that those things that we shouldn't point our fingers that direction, but I think it's important to take into account that, well, with Osama bin Laden dead in 2001, with the U.S. never discovering a single training camp in Afghanistan, with there being no proof of there ever being any significant number of foreign fighters until well after we came, Osama bin Laden's entire retinue was 30 people. And these 30 people were not foreign fighters. They were born Mujahideen who had worked with him when Osama bin Laden, as Ron Paul will tell you, worked for the Central Intelligence Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, who killed Osama bin Laden? We killed Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
And why was he killed? Because he was involved in 9/11. He's never been charged. To shut him up.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Philip France, attorney.
Yes, quite an interesting show, I'll tell you.
Knew it was going to be good. We didn't know it was going to be this good.
I'm not surprised, Mark. I'm really not. It just... I got to ask Gordon one thing, several things. These two 20-foot box cars or containers or whatever, wherever they may be or whatever, it sounds like you've got your whole family in there, no matter what country you're from, and they're used as blackmailers to blackmail any country, including the United States or whatever, and use those two containers to get what they want. And my second question or theory is, why in 1967 did the Joint Chiefs of Staff go along with the execution of 294 men aboard the USS Liberty on the high seas and then cover it up? What benefit does the United States get out of that other than helping Israel get land? And also, thirdly, the book, Attack on the Liberty, by James Scott, refers to jet aircraft in the air ready to drop nukes on Cairo. Do you guys believe all this, or am I just kind of out on left field there?
Now, let me jump in here about the nukes at the time. We get leaks and we get disinformation, and one of the things about having a lot of friends, one of the stories we had come in last week was that the U.S. had lost nuclear weapons in a B-52 mishap off the Somali coast,
right.
And that the Black Hawk Down scenario was an attempted recovery of those nukes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have friends in Somalia who were around at the time, who are around now, who were in government, and I called them. We've been unable to verify this story. Why would somebody tell me this? Why have we had a flood of stories coming in about nukes here, nukes there, nukes everywhere? Well, the only nukes that we know really exist are the nukes that South Africa and Israel built. And as, you know, we have these discussions with Holocaust deniers, and they say 5 million, they say 3 million, and Israel says 6 million. And it's all about the number. If you don't kill 6 million people, if you only kill 500,000 Palestinians, it's not a Holocaust. You got to kill 6 million of them. Well, we can't find 6 million. If we could, the Jews would kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about branding the number. The number lately that's been branded,
mm-hmm.
this is the Jeff Gates deception. We're going to be getting continual news stories about missing nuclear weapons,
mm-hmm.
missing nukes that were supposed to be flying over Iraq in 91, ones that were supposed to be flying over Cairo. This is the deception. You know, funny thing, but President Obama, 8 days ago, thanked South Africa for dropping its nuclear program and destroying its nuclear weapons. We've never admitted officially that he had nuclear weapons, but the president just thanked him for destroying them.
Mm-hmm.
The president never mentioned that the Israelis built them,
mm-hmm.
and that building them was an international crime that should have led to sanctions
right.
against Israel that would have prevented all foreign aid to that country,
mm-hmm.
or any trade with Israel by the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He never mentioned that part. He simply thanked South Africa for destroying their nuclear weapons. But whenever we hear the story about South Africa, and it's out there for anybody that's got internet, South Africa nukes, one thing comes up over and over and over and over. The number six.
Mm-hmm.
Six weapons shipped, six weapons destroyed, six weapons built. Now you can look up the 1979 explosion. Oops, that would be seven. No, but seven didn't exist. The explosion never happened. They built the nukes. They never tested it. Except, of course, they did. What is never brought up is the number 10,
mm-hmm.
because they're missing. That's the great key to everything. 10 were built. 3 were missing. And the 3, now Israel has built, by 1985, Israel had 50 plutonium-based nuclear weapons. Today they have between 200 and 600 nuclear weapons, some very small. With number we know exactly, we don't know. And Israel, it's their job, as with any country, to deceive people about this. And I respect people deceiving people if they had legitimate security interests.
Sure.
But the 3 nukes are very different. Because if a plutonium bomb built at the Dimona reactor were to explode, we could tell where it came from, that Israel did it, and they would pay. These 3 nukes have a South African signature, have been branded as missing and in the hands of terrorists, and they certainly are in the hands of terrorists, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be exploded, and Israel has maintained plausible deniability.
Well,
that's their public blackmail, because they have 3, now 2, nuclear weapons they can use in a false flag attack,
mm-hmm.
and know they can escape justice because they've built a story behind them. That's what makes them dangerous.
Well, Gordon, let me ask you this. Given the fact that we've never inspected Dimona, how are we going to recognize the signature of a nuclear weapon built in Israel if it goes off?
Oh, I assure you, we have sensors that can detect every activity that goes up in Dimona. We can certainly pick up the signature of any of the subatomic particles tied to those weapons. If anyone cares to go online and learn how our non-proliferation hardware works,
mm-hmm.
I know that we have periodically our embassy and military personnel in Israel have for many years sent crews with vehicles and sensors out past Dimona.
Mm-hmm.
We fly planes up and down the border of Jordan with massive sensors,
mm-hmm.
tracking the activities there, because subatomic particles are able to pass through shielding.
Mm-hmm.
It is impossible to move a nuclear weapon anywhere without us detecting it. Now, we have the Vela satellite net, which went up in the 60s and was advanced in the mid-70s to a very high state, even that early on. Right now, there is nothing. every X-ray room in every hospital in the world shows up on a satellite.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the big fear was is that someone was going to take a nuclear weapon and hide it in an X-ray room. That's what the Israelis were saying early on,
mm-hmm.
until the U.S. informed them that, you know, we can tell an X-ray machine from a nuclear weapon in about a second and a half. Try a better story.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't argue with you on that for the simple reason that you obviously have more technical know-how in that regard. The thing that frightens me the most, guys, as demonstrated not only with the history of what took place 43 years ago, what took place on 9/11, but again, what took place here in the last week, is the fact that we have a government who will not protect us from these psychopaths. I mean, I know it's a stretch, okay, for some people to think that if Israel were indeed to detonate a nuclear weapon within the United States for the purposes of creating a false flag event and blaming it on one of her Muslim enemies, who in our Congress, who in the White House is going to stand up and call it for what it is? I mean, I'm asking rhetorically, but I really am looking for an answer here.
Well, Mark, this is why we're branding those bombs as being in Israel's possession. Because we know they are. We know the security services of Great Britain know.
Mm-hmm.
And they love talking about it. There's no problem with that. And, of course, because this word went out not long ago, and some of this was leaked as part of the Iraqi investigation. It began, some of the issues about these missing weapons and the finances tied to them, tied themselves to Tony Blair,
mm-hmm.
and a law in Britain called the Nuclear Explosions Act.
Mm-hmm.
That was a law that required the indefinite detention without trial of any British national tied in any way to a nuclear explosion anywhere in the world. And that law was passed by Britain,
mm-hmm.
because of the belief of the British government that citizens of Britain may have been involved in not just helping misplace three nuclear weapons, but hiding it from the public. Now, fairly recently, an attempt was entered into the House of Lords to alter that law and apply a statute of limitations that would remove the threat of life in prison from a former British prime minister.
You're kidding me.
The director of MI5 resigned her office and testified in front of Parliament to block the passage of that law.
Mm-hmm.
And we have access to that testimony. Now, there's quite a web behind. One of the things we're ignoring here is our friend Phil, his question about back to 1967, why would the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and in particular, the head cover-up artist of all time, Admiral Sidney McCain, allow Israel to murder Americans, to not only hide this, but attempt to shame and silence the Americans who were died in this, frankly, what was the Israeli-American war.
Mm-hmm.
This was a war with Israel. When they attacked a flagged American ship in the Mediterranean, the U.S. and Israel went to war. And, Jeff, if we're heading back in time here to 1967, we go back and look at the actions of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union's secret relationship trading intelligence with Israel, but also the Soviet Union's relationship with the United Arab Republic, which is the combined country that Egypt and Syria created.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, what kind of game theory do you think that Israel was applying to this set of relationships?
Well, they're certainly playing us. I mean, I think one thing that's revealed, I think for the first time in guilt by association, was that the night that the Six-Day War broke out, Lyndon Johnson, then Commander-in-Chief, was having his needs serviced in the White House by a woman named Matilda Krem, a formerly married to an Irgun operative. She herself was an Irgun member, one of the sort of terrorist gangs that was, you know, terrorizing the Palestinians in the mid-1940s, married to Arthur Krem, who was then chairman of the Finance Committee for the Democrats and the largest fundraiser for the party of which our commander-in-chief was the chair. So here we have the commander-in-chief being bedded down by the wife of the top fundraiser, who's a former Irgun terrorist. I mean, if that isn't wonderful pre-staging and setting up to make sure everyone's compromised all the way down the line, again, that's not a surprise. But it, people don't realize the consistency of this, of how this outfit operates. And that's what we're trying to make transparent by setting this preemptive taking of land. It was a land grab, is what it was. In game theory terms, that did precisely what it was meant to do: provoked everyone in the region. That set the stage for what we now are suffering. With everyone upset and continued to be upset for 40 years, how long does it take to get enough people angry at us, because we look guilty by our association with this criminal syndicate, to put us in danger? So I'm hopeful that the Joint Chiefs may now be awakening and saying, oh my goodness, what do we do? Where does our obligation lie? Does it go to civilian leadership, or does it go to protecting the country? And once you find you've got a series of civilian commander-in-chiefs who are compromised, then where does your obligation lie? And I expect that's what our Joint Chiefs are now struggling with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think the only reason why we have not gone into Iran and Syria, in addition to the excellent work that fellows such as you have been up to in figuring out this game theory and basically predicting with a certain amount of what I would say probably on the part of our enemies is frightening accuracy, it also is the military aspect of it as well, where, you know, you will have people like Mullen and others coming out and what appear to be obedient gestures towards the civilian leadership, but behind closed doors, they're probably telling him, hell no, Mr. President, I will not be a part of this because it is going to destroy the country.
Mark, this is a very dangerous time for us as a democracy, because you do want to have maintained civilian leadership, but when the leadership itself is corrupted and has corruption around it, what do you do? And you mentioned, I want to make sure your listeners know, because you mentioned a very loaded word earlier, psychopaths. And I did include a definition of that in Guilt by Association early on. And I just want to read the five descriptors of psychopathy, and they are the following: superficial charm, pathological lying, egocentricity, lack of remorse, and callousness. Now, I needn't say more about the profile of the so-called state that we've seen in action over the past six decades. It absolutely matches it to a T. The challenge is, if you're in a system of self-governance, democracy, the notion is very simple. All of us are smarter than any of us, so let us think together. Let us create a way to talk to each other and think together. And the crowd that we're profiling has dominated the tools that we need for thinking together, particularly mainstream media. So it's delight to have operations like this that are trying to bring facts to people and say, look, here's what's really going on. You know, pay attention, because it's important to your freedom.
Absolutely. And having said that, we are just about at the end of the program here.